I'm going to read our God story passage as the sermon unfolds, so we won't have a separate reading for that, but you can have a pew Bible or your own Bible open to Genesis 21 and Genesis 22, because you may want to follow along and really see if that's what's written in this God story of ours as we talk about it. Now, last week, we began on this journey of 37 weeks in the God story, and I'll just say a few little snippets of review. First off, I'll say that in the foyer, there is actually a narrative lectionary document, so if you want to see what all 37 sermons are and what each text is along the way, that's in the foyer. And then there's also a pamphlet that Eugene Peterson has written that talks about the five acts of the God story. So he talks about creation, he talks about fall, this act called Israel, the fourth act called Jesus, and then the fifth act, the new people of God. And so that might help you just have this bigger understanding of what we're talking about and the big themes that we're trying to hit on during the God story series here at First Baptist. So, 36 weeks to talk about the grand story of God, from beginning to the early church, the new people of God. And I talk about three levels, this big God story happening in this big arc where we're learning about God, but then these key events in the God story, and that's what each sermon is in the next 37 weeks, 37 key events under that big arc of the God story. And then us trying to understand how our story, our life stories, fit into God's big story. And so last week I said the great thing about the God story is that we learn things about identity, kind of who am I? You know, one of those questions of life, who am I and what am I doing here, is found in the God story. Or issues of community, how am I supposed to live in the world? Or we as a community of faith, how are we supposed to live with one another? It's found in the God story. It's not a neat and tidy story, but it's found in the God story. And then even how we interpret our lives, events that happen in our day-to-day lives, how do I interpret my life? Well, those of us who are Christians who say we believe in these scriptures and this God story, we believe that we interpret our life, our lives, in these key events and in this big arc of the God story. And then I said last week that it's messy, it takes time, this is not quick fix work, and we get it right, and sometimes we get it wrong, but from the creation story and as the story unfolds, we should hold on to the hope that God started it all good. And we, as image bearers of this good God, consistently and try to faithfully bear that image of God's goodness to one another. So the first act ends with, it's all good. That's the creation act. And then in the second act, the tension begins. We read the story of the first earth beings, these humans made from dirt, who start off in good creation, on good footing, but then they decide to go their own way, seeking their own wisdom. They listen to the voice of God's enemy, Satan, and thus they rebel against their God who has made all these good things for them in creation. And so we call this second act the fall. And it happens really quickly in our Bibles in a matter of a few pages. But the reality is this God who set this good work, this good creation in motion, sees his own creation, the jewel of his creation, the apple of his eye, God sees them fall off course. And this happens quickly, and then this tension introduces this whole tension that consumes the rest of the story. And maybe even consumes our lives day to day, week to week, this tension of this world we live in that's full of conflict, that's full of struggle, that's full of violence and rebellion. And so maybe understanding the God story does help us understand this world we live in from day to day. And so the tension's there. What will God do with this fallen world? Which leads us into Act 3, Israel. We read the story of how God begins to mend this broken world. And for those of you who are newer to the Genesis story, chapters 1 to 11 are really story and poetry, not scientific dissertation project fodder. Now, I might be bugging some people, especially if you might call yourself a young earth creationist. You might not like that I just said that. But read Genesis 1 to 11, and it's a pretty wild story. I'm going to leave it at that. So chapters 1 to 11 are this poetry, this wild story of beginnings, of God working with humankind in creation. And so it's not until Genesis chapter 12 that we start getting some real history, the history of Israel. And so Genesis 12 begins with one person. Who is he? Starts with an A. Shout it out. Abram, who's later renamed Abraham by God later in the story. So it starts with one person and one people, the people Israel. And so God wants to seek blessing and mending this world through one person and one people, Israel. And so we pick up that story at Genesis 12. And we learn of God's never-ending love for his people in the midst of their devotion, their denial, their worship, and wanderings. So after calling Abraham to lead God's people, God makes this outlandish promise to Abraham. He says, Abraham, look in the skies on this dark, starry night. As many as the stars are in the sky, so your descendants will be. A wild and crazy, huge promise. But we read that Abraham believed the Lord. And it appears that Yahweh is not in a hurry, because it takes another 25 years for Abraham and his wife Sarah to actually get pregnant and to have a child who will then begin this descendants as many as the stars in the sky story. And we read that Abraham's 100 years old and Sarah's probably 90 when their firstborn son Isaac is born. 25 years waiting for a promise. Can you imagine that? Where were you 25 years ago? How old were you 25 years ago? Just think back to that moment in time. Some of you were just a twinkle in your parents' eyes. Can you imagine waiting 25 years for a promise? Like, we can barely wait 25 minutes for a promise, right? Imagine waiting 25 years for a promise. And how many times you might have got it right and been strong and faithful, and how many times you might have wavered in that 25 years. So it's in this unhurried pace and space that we pick up today's story. Genesis 21, verses 1 to 3. The Lord dealt with Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah as he had promised. Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age, at the time of which God had spoken to him. Abraham gave the name Isaac to his son, whom Sarah bore him. So then we jump ahead. Another 12 to 14 years has gone by, and we pick up the focal point of today's story in chapter 22. And in those 12 to 14 years, we don't imagine that Abraham was picture perfect in his way of following God. You can read the stories for yourself, but Father Abraham didn't live this squeaky clean life. He tried to live with this great promise, but he struggled just like you and I do with these promises of God. And so I was thinking, yeah, Father Abraham was not only Father Abraham, but he was fill in the blanks Abraham. And if you read some of the stories of Abraham, there's this part where he and Sarah are entering Egypt. And rather than call Sarah his wife, he decides to call Sarah his sister. Because for some reason, he just kind of wants to fill in the blanks and say, okay, God, I don't think you're going to get me through this, so I'll figure out my own way to get me through this. And then I was thinking about him filling in the blanks when Sarah didn't get pregnant quickly enough. And so Sarah then said, well, take Hagar, our maidservant, and why don't you get pregnant with her? Because maybe that's what God meant when he said your descendants will be as many as the stars in the sky. And Abraham says, oh, no, I would never do that because, Sarah, I want to be faithful to you, and God promised me that it's going to happen through you. Does Abraham do that? No. Abraham, I guess, shrugs his shoulders and goes, okay, maybe you're right. And Abraham fills in the blank and gets in trouble for that, and their house is in turmoil, and then Sarah resents Hagar, but God, in his mercy, protects Hagar. A mess of a story. So is it any surprise that maybe in today's story, Abraham might have got it wrong and maybe filled in the blanks? Now, I don't want to be too hard on Abraham here, but when we recognize that characters in the God story are not superheroes, but they're actually people of flesh and blood, just like you and me, I hope that's hopeful for you. And perhaps this ought to encourage our hearts and remind us that we too have our role to play in the God story, as capable or as incapable as we might think we are. So we continue with Genesis 22, verse 1. After these things, God tested Abraham. He said to him, Abraham. And Abraham said, here I am. Yahweh said, take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah, and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains that I shall show you. Now, in the Jewish understanding of these scriptures, the Jewish commentators in early CE, like 200 to 500 CE, developed something called Midrash, which was their commentaries of what they thought was going on in the world of these crazy stories. And since then, we as Christians have also been trying to figure out, what did God mean when he said crazy things like this that just seemed so mind-blowing? And if there ever was a reason for Midrash moments, I think these first verses in chapter 22 are kind of like that. What kind of test is this, you might ask? Or why would a God we know is loving and always caring and compassionate, tipping the scales towards grace, ask Abraham to undergo a test like this? And so I'm going to do just a little bit of theological banter here and throw out some schools of thought that might help make sense of this story. Why would God test like this? Some people think because sometimes a loving God has to do tough love stuff like this. That's what a loving, holy, just God sometimes has to do. One school of thought. Another one, why a test like this? Maybe this is a story that as the Jewish people recorded it, they actually did some mischievous editing, and they wanted to make themselves look better and God look like the bad guy. So rather than them look bad for disobedience, they make God look bad as being this bloodthirsty God. Or maybe Abraham heard God inaccurately. Maybe he was so encultured to believe that this is just what gods did in this era. They told you to sacrifice your children. And Abraham was just kind of going along with the flow. So I don't know how you hold these crazy and challenging stories in tension, but there's a few thoughts to help us continue to enter in. And like I said last week, we preachers and teachers are going to try to present these God stories as best we can, but there is work for you hearers to do here. There's work for you to do. We're not just going to lay it out neat and tidy for you and say, and this is the moral of the story. There's work for you hearers to do. Isn't that fun? Yes. It's fun. It's an adventure. This is why you should come back week after week for the God story, so that you can hear what in the world is going on here. So there's work for us to do. And I'm not going to force you to believe one way or the other. And Baptists seem to be pretty good at trying to give each other grace and in Christian love as a community of faith trying to interpret the scriptures together. So let's go to work. Maybe choose your posture, but hold it with an open hand. Regardless of what posture you take to enter the further parts of the story, isn't it surprising that Abraham doesn't fuss? He doesn't put up a fight. He doesn't push back. He doesn't try to renegotiate. In verse 3, we just read, Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, took two of his young men with him and his son Isaac, cut the wood for the burnt offering, and set out and went to the place in the distance that God had shown him. And imagine that three-day trek, a grueling trek in the desert. Imagine Abraham. What was he thinking as he was pondering what God had called him to do? Verse 4, on the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place far away. Then Abraham said to his young man, stay here with the donkey. The boy and I will go over there. We will worship and we will come back to you. We? Can you imagine Abraham saying that? Maybe he can hardly believe that he said we, because apparently what he was told to do was to burn his son in that offering, and he was going to come back solo. True? But maybe something was going on in Abraham's heart and mind where he just couldn't imagine this God wanting to snuff out Isaac's life. And maybe in the back of his mind, he's thinking, isn't my son kind of integral to this descendants as many as the stars in the sky thing? Put yourself in the story that way. We read, Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on his son Isaac. And he himself carried the fire and the knife. So the two of them walked on together. So what was supposed to be this three-hour walk probably felt like 1,000 miles. And 1,000 hours. And in the midst of this walk, Isaac says to his father, Abraham, Father. And Abraham says, here I am, my son. Isaac said, the fire and the wood are here, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? Abraham said, God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. So the two of them walked on together. I want you to try to live in the world of this conversation for just a moment. Did Abraham really believe those words that fell out of his mouth at this moment? Was this just wishful thinking so that he could protect the heart and ears of his 13-year-old son? And wouldn't you and I have done the same thing? Agonize with Abraham in these final moments as he's walking up to the summit of this mountain in Moriah, huffing and puffing. When they came to the place that God had shown him, Abraham built an altar there and laid the wood in order. He bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar, on top of the wood. Then Abraham reached out his hand and took the knife to kill his son. Does anybody want to say, whoa, 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 hey, wait a minute. Do you ever say, whoa, 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 when you're reading God's word? Anyone? It's probably a good spot. Like, that's why I didn't really want to read this text, because at the end we always say, and thanks be to God. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God? But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. I imagine Abraham crumbling to the ground in a state of exhaustion and weariness, and with parched lips saying, here I am. The angel of the Lord said, do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him, for now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. And Abraham looked up and saw a ram caught in the thicket by its thorns. Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called that place, the Lord will provide. As it is said to this day, on the mount of the Lord, it shall be provided. Last week I said each week as we walk through the God story, we'll try to live out of the story that we hear as we worship and work together in this place. And so how might we live out of this story this week? I think there's a few options. This text is all often preached as this is radical obedience and sacrifice, and You just need to do that same radical obedience and sacrifice, everybody. And when it gets hard, just try harder. But I just don't read that God asks us to be superheroes. He doesn't ask us to be unflappable. He doesn't ask us to always have our act together. He doesn't ask us to always have the right answer. Or you can look at this story as, well, sometimes God has to do what God has to do. Sometimes he needs to really drop the hammer and make his point. Because that's what God's like. But then, how does that make God any different than any of the other gods in our lives that seem to ask for a pound of flesh or ask us to do these seemingly horrible things? This doesn't seem like to be the God of grace when the God of grace has to put on brakes and then say, you need to kill someone. So I'm going to insert my bias here and say, we serve a God who is audacious in surprising us. And the God that we think God is often not the God we thought he was. We thought God wanted a bloody sacrifice of the firstborn son, the son that took 30 years to come. Or we think God every once in a while needs to kill people in cold blood. And in order to prove our devotion, we need to follow suit. But I want to encourage you as you're reading the God story to hear God's heart. God is saying, I don't say that. I don't ask you to do that. God might be saying, you said that, and you allow your hearts to be cultured in such a way that you actually think you're doing God's work when you're actually doing the opposite of what I'm calling you to do. God says, listen to me. Listen to my heart. I am a different God. And from Eden to eternity, my word to you is that I love you. And I love every nook and cranny of this good creation that I've made. And I do not desire that anyone would perish, and I'll never pursue violence as a way of getting my point across. It will always be providence. Me, Yahweh, God, proving and providing for you time after time, showing that I am with you. I love you. I've loved you with this everlasting love. And in the words and the heart of Jesus, my son whom I love, nothing, absolutely nothing, will snatch you out of the embrace or my heart or my hands. And so as we live out of this messy, complicated, challenging God story this week, I hope we might respond and pray. Maybe this way. Maybe we might pray to Father Abraham, who was this saint who's gone before us. Thank you, Abraham, for being human. And in the midst of your folly, and in the midst of your faith, in the midst of your mischief, and in the midst of your misbelief, thanks for reminding us that God is different. And that God is full of audacious surprises. And that God will continue to provide us with this promise that says, the Lord will provide. Lord, in your mercy, hear our prayers.